Welcome to Creating Sanctuary for Animals, a global interview series featuring 21 heroes who are saving animals' lives. I'm your host, Yolanda Calderon, and the hero that I'm interviewing today is J.P. Novick, Executive Director of CAPE, which stands for Center for Animal Protection and Education. JP has been working in the field of animal protection for 40 years, starting at the Humane Society. She then founded a spay and neuter project in San Diego, which is still going strong. Over the years, her commitment deepened as an advocate for animals of all species, and now she lives in Grass Valley, California, and is very proud to report that over the past 25 years, CAPE has saved thousands of animals through their rescue, outreach, and sanctuary programs. Welcome, JP. I am so glad you could be here.
Oh, thank you so much, Yolanda. It's great to talk to you.
Yeah, and thank you especially for being here. I know you're going through a rough time right now with your doggy, but it's great that you could still talk to us. It sounds like you started working on animal welfare issues at a really young age. What was the initial inspiration for you?
Well, I think I, along with so many other people who are, advocating for the rights of animals, I had that sort of, when I was a young child, that inkling, that connection at a very young age, but didn't exactly know how to plug it in. What happened was along the way I met people, one of them being Kim Sterla, who is one of the co-founders of Animal Place, who was sort of a life changer for me. I left a very, thriving career as an occupational therapist and just made the switch over to working as a humane educator. And I knew that it was the right direction for me to go in because I am passionate about animals, and I learned so much along the way about all the issues that need to be addressed in order to make this world a peaceful place for them.
That's so great. I'm also interviewing Kim Sterla for this series, so it's going to be great. I didn't realize that you guys had that connection. And
yes,
and you started out having compassion for people, and it also expanded to animals, which is kind of the direction I'm going to. Because I'm also a body worker and a wellness coach, and compassion starts with people, and somehow you start seeing animals as, not as people necessarily, but also as completely valid beings that deserve our compassion and love too.
Right. And those two things can really go hand in hand, the kind of work that you do. We focus a lot of our work is focused on helping animals who have special needs, like our sanctuary in Grass Valley. Almost all the animals that come here to stay to live out their life, have some kind of special needs. Blind animals and animals that are very old who have cleft palates, who have, some kind of orthopedic injury. And my days as an occupational therapist has really come in handy, because there's a lot of crossover in how to help animals who have disabilities and people who have disabilities. So it's kind of a blend of, experiences that brought us here.
Sure, that makes total sense. Like, you wouldn't believe how many massages my dogs get.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So I know CAPE does rescue and sanctuary, and like you said, you take care of special needs animals. What is the educational part of CAPE?
Well, so let me give you a little history about CAPE. We were founded, we're in our 26th year now, and our board of directors is basically, we've added a couple of people, but we're a very stable organization. We have the same board of directors. We have veterinarians, medical doctors, and animal advocates on our board, which has been really helpful to have such stability. And we did 10 years of a television show called Speaking of Animals. It was an award-winning television show, where we had guests from every walk of life who was doing something to help animals on our show. We had a radio show for a long time. And then we started making our own videos. We use a lot of video. If you go to our YouTube channel,
mm-hmm.
you'll see we have video is just such a powerful way to reach people and educate people about the issues that animals face. And then, of course, as you know, because I saw you there last weekend, we have our newest program, which is the Animal Film Festival, which is, I'm very proud of this project. It's become a worldwide event. We have our Animal Film Festival. We have our own Roku channel. So our goal is to help filmmakers really get their films out into the world and to keep them alive. We have hundreds of films submitted to our festival, and we only pick 22 of the top-rated films. And they're about every possible issue you could imagine. So we are spending a lot of time and energy right now taking our film festival on the road and trying to get these wonderful independent films out into the world. There's so much education that needs to happen, and we've got these fantastic films that can do it. The filmmakers just need the support of how to get their films seen, you know, in front of as many eyeballs as possible. And so that's the big E in education for us.
Yes, I swear that was the most beautiful film festival, and there was everything in it, and there was, you know, there was a little bit of crying, but there was also a lot of joy. It was really, really well put together. And it was just wonderful and inspiring to see all of the people, both the people in the films and the people who went to see the film festival, who've dedicated their lives to making the world safer for animals. So I want to give you a plug right here, because is there like a website just for the film festival, or should people go to your website first to find out more about that? And you said it's on Roku. So how do people access those films on Roku?
Okay. Well, thank you. First of all, thank you for coming to the film festival, Yolanda, and thank you for your feedback. I really, really appreciate it. Mm. So we have a dedicated website for the film festival. So the film festival website is animalfilmfestival.org. And then we have another website that talks about our other four programs. And that website is capeanimals.org. And something that I think, you know, after having been around for 25 years and we've really sort of refined our programs, you know, we have five very specific programs. Some of them are very hands-on. Animal rescue, we do a lot of dog rescue, we collaborate with many, many other organizations. And, you know, one thing I wanted to say here, Yolanda, that I think is, you know, really just important is that I think that in the movement, in the animal protection movement, we get the most effectiveness when we collaborate. And I think probably what you were seeing when you came to the film festival on Saturday, there were a lot of groups there who had their films represented. And then there was a lot of sort of, you know, connections being made. Because when we collaborate with each other, with people who have similar philosophies, who are kindred spirits, the animals benefit from that. And I'm seeing more and more of that happen, which makes me very happy, because after having been involved in these issues for so long, where there was at one time just competitiveness, you know, like who was going to, you know, raise the most money, or I'm seeing a lot more collaboration, and that just really thrills me.
I'm so happy about that, because, we need to stop thinking in terms of limited donor dollars and just reach out to all of the people that don't even realize yet how important animal rights is to them.
Yep, and I appreciate you talking about the films and the sort of the way it's put together is, I think some people might be afraid to go to an animal film festival that they're just going to be seeing graphic film after graphic film. And there are some films that need to show that in order for people to go, oh, my gosh, I had no idea.
Right. That's what changed me. That is what changed me.
Was a film?
Yeah.
Which film?
Well, it's actually a Facebook clip. It was a Facebook video of mm-hmm. seeing what happens to baby chicks, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, then that was when I gave up eggs for good.
That's how it works, you know. I think people want to be compassionate and kind, but if they don't know, if you didn't know that the eggs you were buying in the store involved, you know, crushing the little males and de-beaking, if they don't know that, they don't know, okay, boycott that. So part of our mm-hmm. goal with the film festival is to guide people through some of these issues, have the filmmakers there to discuss them, and then also sprinkle it with films that are just going to make you crack up and laugh. You know.
Yes, because animals have so much joy, and when you capture that on video, it's really a beautiful thing, and it can change your day when you just watch it. It can be really powerful.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Good. I'm glad we talked about the film festivals. I wanted to ask you about your service as a public member of the Letterman Army Institute of Research. So you were there from 85 to 90, and you even testified on behalf of the animals in Washington, D.C. How did you get involved with that? What is it exactly? And I have a follow-up question once you...
Okay. And I know that seems like, that was a long time ago. That's old news. It's really not old news for a variety of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, talk about an issue that has gone underground, you know. So by law, any research institution that uses non-human animals as subjects, they are required by law to have a public member on the committee that is sort of like the representative for the animals, the voice for those animals, that is there to review the protocols, the mm-hmm. scientific protocols. I was working at a humane society at the time, and I was invited to be that public member on the Animal Use Committee at Letterman Army mm-hmm. Institute of Research.
Mm-hmm.
And so for 5 years, I reviewed every protocol that went through their committee, and I had a vote.
Uh-huh.
And fortunately, the good thing is that at the time, I was actually working half-time for a humane society and half-time as an occupational therapist at Stanford Hospital. And so it's right when I was, during the time I was sort of transitioning jobs. And I was given the okay by Letterman that I could show these protocols to other physicians and scientists at Stanford. And so it wasn't just, you know, me being having an untrained eye looking at these scientific protocols that they were proposing. I took them to experts. And mm-hmm. the horrifying thing about this situation, Yolanda, was that 100% of the protocols had very major objections by these other scientists. Either they were redundant, or they were not using proper pain medication postoperatively, or that, you know, these were, you know, just, you know, sort of ridiculous things where there were already, you know, either drugs or procedures that had already been, you know, invented. So I was mm-hmm. the lone voice submitting minority report after minority report saying, objecting to these, you know, to the science. And it was probably one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. Twice a year, we had to go and do a tour of the facility. You know, each facility has to be approved of by these federal committees. So we would walk through and observe cage after cage after cage. I'm talking hundreds and hundreds of a lot of primates, mostly primates. They were using uh-huh. cynomolgus monkeys. A lot of dogs were being used. Yeah, no, I got to see on the inside. And nowadays, you know, oftentimes the public member is somebody who is not a true animal advocate. They're there just sort of as a, you know, a yes person. So the whole issue of vivisection is I could talk about it forever, but it's really a difficult one. It's gone very much underground. You know, we've even been waiting for a good film to come out about vivisection. And we've gotten a couple that were not really, you know, they weren't strong enough to be in the Animal Film Festival. But that is an issue that is sort of near and dear to my heart. And I'll let you in on a little secret. Cape is planning a project next year that will address this issue.
Great.
It's a real tough one.
So aside from buying products that are not tested on animals, is there something that the public, that our listeners can do now to affect cruel practices in animal testing?
So it's not just animal testing for, you know, let's say cosmetics or whatever. It's also for biomedical use. And what I would say, Yolanda, is that there are organizations specifically dedicated to that issue, to, you know, to being the voice for the animals that are in those facilities. I would get involved with them. There's if you Google it, you know, there's quite a few anti-vivisection organizations that try to stay on top of the numbers of animals, who's being used, who the oversight. So that I would definitely say to get involved with those organizations and educate yourself. You know, what's hard is that, for example, with the issue of, you know, eating animals. You know, we have a lot of films that come in about, you know, farming practices and how animals are treated in that whole industry. And, you know, most people, a lot of people that are, know about this issue and are concerned about it understand that we don't have any federal laws that protect animals in the food industry. Well, the same is true for animals used in vivisection, that there are anti-cruelty laws that protect your companion animals, your dog and cat. But because of the way the Federal Animal Welfare Act is written, and there animals that are in labs don't have those same protections, which is ridiculous. I mean, that's just, you know, immoral.
Yeah,
so there's
they had
so
less,
much work that needs to be done at a legal level, at a federal level. So it's a very big, complicated issue that I wish more and more people would just get involved with.
Would you say that vivisection has been reduced since the 80s or 90s, or would you say that it's actually increased?
I think it's really hard to say. I think there's more awareness about product testing. You know, there's some of our, you know, national organizations have done a really good job of educating the public. And now we have all these wonderful alternatives. So I think product testing has been, we've had some success in that. You know, if you go into people's homes, you'll often see, oh, great, they're using products that have not been tested on animals. There's sort of an awareness about that. And there needs to be more. It needs to be, you know, and there are more companies popping up. Just like with alternatives to meat, there's alternatives popping up. So that, we are making progress in that realm. And, you know, one thing I want to say, Londa, that is one of the important things is that when we address issues about, you know, eating animals and that people want to get involved in that, they can use their voice 3 times a day when they pick what they're going to eat. We can empower people by saying, here's the first thing you can do is just take them off your plate. You know, it's gotten easier and easier to do that. And, you know, one thing I'm so happy about because, you know, when you talk to us old folks who have been doing this a very long time, you know, back in the mid-80s, I didn't know hardly anybody who didn't eat animals. Like Kim was like the first person I met, you know, who had that developed philosophy. Well, now everywhere I go, Oh, no, I'm vegan. I went into it's this little shop up here called Afternoon Deli. And they have vegan alternative there. And the owner came out to talk to me. And we were just talking. I said, you know, can we get more? Oh, she goes, oh, no, I'm vegan. My whole family's vegan. All my kids are vegan. It's like, it's a growing. It's becoming more and more sort of, you know, politically correct. And with so many young people getting it and getting the messages, we are making progress.
Right.
So there's the good
news. I see that too. Yeah, that is the good news. And actually, I was going to ask you, what is the most rewarding part of your work right now?
You know what, Yolanda? There's so many parts that are rewarding. Well, first of all, I'm a really hands-on person. There is, to me, there is nothing more sort of fulfilling than when we go and we take an animal out of harm's way and we bring them here to the sanctuary, or we find a good home for them. That just is like, you know, keeps me breathing. But the other really rewarding part is just all these people that are dedicating their lives to it. We need all of them. We need every single voice. And people are doing a lot, a variety of things. You know, there are some people that are in the trenches, you know, doing, you know, hands-on rescue. There's people that are doing a little bit more welfare-y stuff, like the initiative, which is also important. To me, anything somebody does that is an act of compassion towards animals, it's a step ahead. So I'm just very encouraged by what I'm seeing. It's
good.
Pretty exciting right now.
Good. That's
and
good.
I know you're
hear from
I know
like
you wanted to talk about your, you know, your wonderful summit is really, you know, you've underscored people who are running sanctuaries. And have you been to our sanctuary?
Not yet. I keep wanting to go. But I end up at Animal Place, and I keep thinking, okay, next time I'm going to go to Cape. But I did go to your film festival.
Yes. Oh, please, Yolanda. I want you, I'd love for you to come and just spend a day with us.
That is definitely in the books, yes.
Yeah, I mean, running a sanctuary it's a lot of work. Don't let anybody tell you that it is, you know, there's a lot of work involved. But, you know, all the people that work here, it is a true labor of love. I mean, the cleaning is, like, intense.
I believe you. Picking up a lot of poop.
Yeah, and you know, every single animal here they're a spokes model. We use them to tell the stories of the thousands and thousands of animals that they represent. For example, we have a herd of burros that came from the Bureau of Land Management. You know, they were rounded up.
I was going to ask you about them.
Because I know you love donkeys. I know that.
Yeah, I'm a donkey person. Yes, yes. Tell us about the burros that you have.
Well, we decided that we sort of did a test pilot on rescuing burros from the BLM, and we sort of dove into it, not really knowing what we were doing, and have learned along the way, you know, how to do it, because the animals that come off of the range, you know, they're wild, and we wanted to allow them to sort of keep as much wild in them as we could safely. But the reason why these animals are rounded up, the wild mustangs and the burros, is because the government wants them off of government land so that they could let ranchers put their cattle on there for cattle grazing.
Yep.
So thousands and thousands of these animals have been rounded up, and basically it's the way they round them up is incredibly cruel. And then they put them in holding pens and put them up for adoption. Well, a lot of them just don't get adopted. You know, people, you know, don't want wild to deal with a wild burro. I want to direct everybody to an organization that we just love and we rely on, and that's the American Wild Horse Campaign, because they follow all the herds and they know exactly when the roundups are happening, how many animals are being rounded up. They try to work very directly with the BLM to just let these animals
alone. Let them be wild. They've been there for hundreds of years. They're part of our heritage. But it has to do with the meat industry. It's all intertwined. So,
Absolutely.
Again, this is another, you know, story we could spend hours and hours talking about, but I want to direct people that have an interest in this issue to go to the American Wild Horse Campaign website and get on their mailing list, because they send out alerts, you know, every week to keep you updated.
Yep, I've been getting those alerts, and I was in one of their videos. Yeah.
I know you were. That was awesome.
Yep, yeah, they are doing amazing work. You know, along the lines of having a sanctuary, you started talking about that a little bit, and I wanted to ask you if you have any piece or pieces of advice you'd like to give someone before they set out to do their own rescue and sanctuary.
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, I do have a little advice. And that advice is to take it slow. Like, we've seen several sanctuaries and rescue organizations dive in, because it's a natural instinct for people that have such compassion that they want to dive in and just start saving all these animals. And it's to do it right. You need a plan. You need sort of a medium and long range plan, and you need to have a fundraising. You know, it costs a lot of money to do it right. You know, our biggest budget item on the sanctuary are vet bills, and so my recommendation is just to take it slow, one step at a time. If there's anybody out there that is thinking of doing a sanctuary, call me. I will help. I am so happy to help with that.
You might get some phone calls.
That would be my pleasure. You know, you want to have a 501c3 in place. That takes a little bit of time. And then I think one of the reasons that CAPE has been in existence for so long is that we had very specific plans along the way. We had a 1-year plan, a 2-year plan, a 5-year plan, a 10-year plan. And when we look back at those plans, everything fell into place right exactly as we planned it. It's sort of like, you know, watch out what you wish for, because it will happen. But you just have to be prepared for it, both financially and, you know, I've seen it happen where people end up with so many animals that they don't have the wherewithal to provide the proper care. And that's a disaster. So go slow.
Right, because then other sanctuaries end up picking up the slack for those animals. I've heard about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, JP, that time with you flew, and I want to thank you so much for your time, and I wish all the best for you and all the beautiful creatures that you have on your place. And I also want to thank our listeners and encourage them to go to your website at capeanimals.org, C-A-P-E, animals.org. And I will talk to you again very soon. And you've been listening to Creating Sanctuary for Animals. And I'm your host, Yolanda Calderon.
Thank you, Yolanda.